Okay, so we were discussing today was supposed to be the big day of a debate slash discussion, suddenly discussion on Islam, and me, myself, and Abdullah Gondal are both motivated to discuss this topic. We feel that the topic of Islam is very important to the world today. People are, some people are becoming Muslim, some people are leaving Islam. It's something that greatly affected both of us to the point of, both of us were very religious Muslims. A great piece of our life was dedicated to the cause of Islam. In fact, our entire lives were in some way or other affected by Islam, which is why we're motivated to continue speaking about it. Thankfully for both of us, we live in a country where we have freedom of speech. We live in a democratic, secular society where we have the right to be ourselves, to express our opinions, to say what we believe, what we don't believe. And the same way, Muslims have every right in Canada to be themselves, to practice their religion, to pray 5 times a day, to go out on the corner of the street and to preach that this is the final word of God, this Quran, right? And this is a final testament of the prophet, right? And this is his final speech, and to make videos and to go on, and basically to have interfaith dialogues. I mean, we have this right in Canada, so we are taking full advantage of this beautiful law and this beautiful system that allows us to say what we believe or what we don't believe. And if you live in the West, you know that it's actually greatly to your advantage, even as a Muslim, to live in the West, because you have this protection under the law, right? It's if you're in certain countries, for example, Egypt was one place where you could actually be killed, if you were spreading, certain things. You can be put in jail, you can be beaten up, you can be shot at by snipers, if you're in certain parts of the world. If you're Shia, you can be oppressed under certain regimes, or if you're Ahmadiyya, or in Pakistan and certain places, you can be oppressed. So, living in Canada, we have a really good standard of living, a really great life. People are free to be themselves and to believe what they want to believe. Of course, the condition is that, people don't hurt others, and people are able to practice the religion up to the point where they start forcing it onto others. So if you get to the point where somebody says, well, I live in Canada and I want to implement this law where nobody can, like women cannot go out in skirts, or alcohol, you cannot sell alcohol on the street. This obviously you can't do that because it conflicts with other people's rights, right? Other people have the right to drink alcohol or to dress however they want to according to the law. And of course, if somebody wants to change the law, they have every right under democracy to petition the government and to work under this system, this framework, to change the laws. I mean, by all means, if somebody wants to ban alcohol, I mean, they have every right to go to the government, to make a petition, to talk to the MP, and to say, well, I think it's harmful for these reasons, and for that reason alone, we will ban it. And of course, people will vote on that, and at the end of the day, people will get to decide what they want, the laws they want to live under. And this is why we have a beautiful society here where the people are able to express themselves, and why people want to continue migrating to Canada, to Australia, to UK, to the US, right? So anyways, that intro is a little bit, oh, it went a little bit longer than I wanted to. So Abdullah Gondal is with me. He's an ex-Muslim for just under 1 year. He was the fellow that was going to be doing the debate. And like I said, unfortunately, it fell out for various reasons. Kenny Bowman wasn't able to come and do the debate. So we're going to continue. Instead of having a debate, we're just going to have a little conversation on something we've been kind of debating back and forth. And we've been discussing, is it possible? Many people have asked me in the past, and I'm sure Abdullah Gondal gets this question all the time. What was Muhammad's motivation? What was his intentions? Why did he do this? Right? It said, Muhammad said, if I had the sun in one hand and the moon in one hand, I wouldn't give up this message, right? And in another thing, he got his whole tribe was basically tortured and boycotted, and they were starving, and yet, despite the deaths, people were dying, his uncle and others. Some people even say that the reason that his uncle eventually died was from the cause of the boycott, right? So this had a very severe impact on his family, on his, Muslims were being killed and Sumayya was, you know, executed and tortured, and, you know, Bilal was tortured. So what was his motivation? Like, why was he doing this, right? And so there's different theories out there, and we're going to discuss one idea, one possibility as to what was his motivation. Abdullah Gondal has been doing some research on this, and none of us are experts, none of us are scientists, but we have, you know, a great familiarity with the Islamic scriptures, both the Quran and Hadith. And so, Abdullah, you want to just start with, let's. What's the first incident that gives a hint that maybe Muhammad was suffering from some sort of maybe temporal lobe epilepsy? And, you know, let's actually go back one step. I'll ask you that later. Go ahead. Let's start the conversation. Why do you think he might have had some sort of mental illness?
Well, first we got to analyze how he behaved and what kind of experiences he had prior to becoming a prophet. Just a quick summary of it. When he was a young child, he was playing with his friends, and this incident occurs in Sahih Muslim and is recorded in various Sirah books. He says that he was playing, and I believe angels came to him, put him on the ground, ripped open his chest, took his heart out, put it in a bowl, washed it, and then took a clot of blood out and said that was Satan inside you, and then restitched his heart and put it back in his chest. And this apparently allegedly happened when he was between the ages of around 5 to 6 years old. The issue with this incident was that all of his friends and all the people that were around him could not verify that this ever happened, really. But Muhammad insisted it did, and he actually boasted about it. One of the interesting reactions was Halima's, who was taking care of Muhammad. And one of Muhammad's father's friends, this is recorded in Ibn Ishaq on page 72 in the Gilalem translation, that I'm just quoting, Muhammad's father's friend said to me, that is Halima, "I am afraid that this child has had a stroke, so take him back to his family before the results appear." Then we move on, she goes back, and then when she gets back, she's talking to Muhammad's mom. So I'll continue the quote again. She, Muhammad's mother, asks me what happened and gave me no peace until I told her. When she asked if I feared a demon had possessed him, I replied that it did. This shows that one of the common problems is when people hallucinate, right? They tend to have a very vivid experience, but the people around them obviously can't see it. Mm-hmm. This is exactly what happens with this incident. Nobody else saw it. Muhammad saw it, right? Another interesting thing to note is this almost identical experience reoccurs to Muhammad in his sleep before he rode a winged beast to heaven to meet God. And the problem is, why is the same incident word to word repeating itself? Like, it's identical. And what's the point of repeating the same incident? I mean, his heart's already been cut open once. The clot has been extracted. That was Satan. Why do it again?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, and this is not at all a controversial hadith. I mean, Muslim scholars boast about it. Like Hamza Yusuf says, this was the first open heart surgery in Islam. So we're talking about things that, you know, Orthodox Sunni Muslims believe in. Now,
yeah.
So continue. Yeah.
These incidents are recorded in Bukhari, Muslim, and in various Sira books, including Ibn Ishaq's. Another thing to note is before Muhammad became a prophet, he used to be a shepherd. He used to take the sheep around outside the city of Mecca in the mountains all by himself. He used to say that he heard voices, and then he literally made a claim that he actually heard a stone give salutations to him.
And interestingly, where is this reference? What's the reference for this?
This is in Sahih Muslim.
Okay. Well, just to jump in there, why do you think he would boast about these things, especially, you know, after claiming to be a prophet? Why would he say stones are talking to me and giving me peace? You know, why? What would be his motivation in even sharing these things? Because You know, we didn't go back. If we go back to the beginning, the very beginning of when he first got prophethood, let's go back there. What happened at that point? You know, according to the story, according to the Seerah, what was the first thing that happened?
You're talking about the first revelation?
Yeah.
So basically, Muhammad goes in a cave and he's either meditating. There's two versions. One says that he was asleep in Ibn Hisak. The other hadith said that he was meditating and he was aware, fully awake and conscious. And then allegedly, an angel comes to him. Bear in mind that at this point, Muhammad does not know this is an angel. Okay? This entity hugs him or strangles him once to the point where Muhammad says he felt like he was going to die and he had struggled to breathe. And then the entity lets go. It grabs him again, does the same thing, then lets go, and then grabs him again, and then lets him go. The interesting thing to note about this is as soon as the third time it finishes, the angel repeats, the alleged angel repeats a few words that are found in the first, I believe, five verses of Surah Iqra or Surah Alaq. It's chapter 96 of the Quran. This forms the first revelation. But the problem is when Muhammad gets up from his sleep or the vision or the hallucination is over, he himself is actually concerned what it was, because his initial reaction was not that it was an angel. He himself thought, here's the sentences that he utters in, it's recorded in by Tabari and in Ibn Ishaq Sirah, that woe to me, am I possessed or a poet? And then he runs back to his wife. A couple of things actually happen in this. One thing that I remember is he is struggling to breathe, okay? And the narrations in Bukhari also mention his neck muscles are twitching with terror, and he goes home and he is scared for his life, and he tells his wife to cover me, and she puts a blanket over him, and he's trembling, scared underneath the blanket. Now, Muhammad explains the whole idea to his wife, and she says, oh, you're a nice guy, God cannot forsake you, tries to comfort him. Eventually, Muhammad is still very skeptical, and he becomes suicidal. These hadith are found in Bukhari, where Muhammad would, and it's not once, twice, it's quite a few times, where he went up on top of mountains and tried to throw himself off to kill himself. And the words that are used in the hadith and the narration say that he actually said, so I can get peace for myself. Like, he was not happy with what was going on. The funny part was when he would be going up the mountain to throw himself off, he said he would hear a voice say that you are the prophet of God and I am Gabriel. And just a quick note on this incident, that a man is suicidal because he had an experience he can't explain. A man is trying to commit suicide. He hears a voice tell him, you are the prophet of God, don't kill yourself. Mm-hmm. Then the man looks up in the sky and sees a human, kind of an angel, but I think about 600 wings, standing in the horizon. And then wherever he looks, the same image appears to him.
Right.
Now, yeah. What's interesting more is if it is a hallucination, and what neuroscience has told us, and if it's an image produced inside your head by your brain, wherever you look, you will still see the image because it's in your head. It's being imposed on reality where you're gazing at.
Wow, and that's interesting.
And Muhammad said he saw him as before, whichever direction he looked.
Yeah.
Another thing Muhammad said that...
Now, the interesting thing, I just want to jump in there for 1 second. Mm-hmm. So either way, we'll never know for sure, but this is something that's worth investigating. This is something that's worth discussing. This is something that's worth thinking about because, you know, people's lives are depending on this man, right? And what he said and what he did. And if you know, 1400 years later, we were looking at this and we're seeing some certain signs. I mean, we won't know for sure, but we can actually come up with a plausible explanation as to what may have happened because people really want to know. And I have a friend in real life that told me that he has a little bit of mental illness in his family. He's actually a successful software developer. He's doing very well for himself, and he works full-time job, and he's on his way up, And this fellow told me that, surprise, surprise, a couple of years ago he had some issues where when he was in university, he was healing things. And he told me that, it was surprising, right? What happened was he was sitting in his room and he would hear someone talking to him, right? And he was like he thought someone was talking to him inside the university from outside the hallway, right? So he just told him, shut up, right? And he went back to his work. And it happened again in a different circumstance. And again, he was like, shut up, right? Like, leave me alone, right? I have work to do. And then he said he called his, he decided to go home, away from the university, and then it happened in the car. So then when it happened in the car, he realized, oh my God, there's something wrong with me. I have a mental illness. And he went and he checked it out. He went to the doctor. I believe he took some medication for some time, and then it went away. Now, this guy, it never happened to him again ever since then. But like this guy, he's a successful software developer. He works a full-time job. He's incredibly smart. This guy, he's a very smart person. I, in a sense, I look up to him. We have good conversations. We're good buddies. But I never would have known this guy was hearing things and seeing. I don't know if he actually saw things as well, if it ever got that far. But it, what doesn't like people sometimes think that, well. And let me ask you that. How is it possible if Muhammad had, these hallucinations, how is it he could become so successful in what he was doing?
So, when people ask this question, how could Muhammad be so successful? They have to understand that there's varying degrees of the disease and how it affects a person. Normally, what we know that people who suffer from temporal lobe epilepsy or cases of schizophrenia can, by far and large, function as normal humans when they're not having their episodes or not hearing voices. And the saying that, oh, Muhammad, was schizophrenic, but he can't be because he had a huge army, he was a military leader. How could he accomplish so much while being crazy? That's actually a wrong question to ask, because if he can do it and hold coherent logical thoughts apart from his experiences, then he's a totally fine man. And we were actually talking earlier today about there's a university professor of law who's a graduate from Yale University who is schizophrenic, and she's extremely successful. So it is very possible for these epileptic patients or schizophrenics to be able to maintain a healthy life or be able to function like normal people when they're not having their experiences. What problematic is that Muhammad has some experiences, he interpreted them the wrong way, and then built up religion on top of it.
Right. Now, what would have people? Okay, so just for one second, before I forget, I just want to do one thing. Okay, just putting up the link, so people can see. Okay. Okay, so everyone can see that this is a lady that Abdullah is speaking about, right there. Okay, so okay, continue. Yep.
Also, another thing is temporal lobe epileptic patient, as explained by Dr. Ramchandran and quite other neuroscientists. They can refer to their videos for details. These people actually, when they do have experiences, they have auditory visual hallucinations, and sometimes they have very, very profound philosophical experiences. They'll come out and they say, "I just understood the true meaning of the universe and my existence." And then a lot of these people would say that they can feel God, or they can speak to God, or they can speak to somebody who is divine.
Right.
So with that aside, what we need to note is Muhammad didn't start having these experiences after he became a prophet. They were before the prophethood as well and continued after. One other thing to note is before he became a prophet, he says, this is in Sahih Muslim, that he would hear stones talk to him. There's other problems where Muhammad would say that he would actually speak to these invisible beings called jinns. He would see angels. There's an incident where he said that he actually choked Satan and tied him to a pillar of the mosque, but then let him go in the morning. There's another incident where a tree informed Muhammad about a jinn. There's incidents where there's literally a tree stump, and Muhammad hears the tree stump crying like a baby because it misses Muhammad. So Muhammad goes and hugs the tree stump to quiet it down. And just imagine that this is the final prophet of God who talks to stones, talks to trees. Not only that, he's hugging trees. He's seeing these mythical beings. He's seeing angels. He's saying he's hearing voices. On top of that, initially he was suicidal and he thought he was possessed. And he
according to Islam, you know, everything is worshiping Allah. The rocks are worshiping Allah. The sun and the moon are worshippers of Allah. The stones and everything. So couldn't it be that he had, you know, he was hearing like, you know, it's like, you know how rabbits are not rabbits. I don't know. Like dogs, some animals can hear things that we can't hear. So how do we not know that when the tree was crying, he just had like a sixth sense that he could hear the tree crying? And, you know, what do you think about that?
Well, if it was an animate object, I would get it. But an inanimate object like a stone who has no vocal cords, no way to actually perceive, no consciousness, no idea to hear Muhammad say anything back.
How do you know the stones have no consciousness? Maybe they're having discussions. Hey, you see that guy over there? He's a prophet of God.
No. I think it's not limited to our sensory perception, right? We can
not convinced that the stones were actually talking to him. But I mean, what's more likely? Is it more likely that like Muhammad lied? I mean, or the stones talk? Of course the stones talk. Like, why would he, like, how could he just make that up? Just to be logical here. Okay, we have two options. Mm-hmm. Either the stones were actually talking and the tree was crying, or he heard it and saw it and made it up. Come on, like, he's Al-Amin, right? But okay, mm-hmm. So I'm being a little bit sarcastic here, but you know, going back again, let's step back one more time. Did these things even happen? Is it possible that these things never happened, period, and this was all made up? These stories in Bukhari, is it possible they're just made up?
Yeah, it's totally possible. I mean, considering that these hadith were written about 200 years after Muhammad's time is one problem. But the issue is that a lot of them are actually reported with a lot of different chains, not just in the hadith books, or repeated before the hadith books in the seerah books. Another thing to notice is when people said that he was hallucinating or he was seeing things, there's actually the Quran itself testifies to that, because his own contemporaries would think that he was actually going crazy. And there's about 6 or 7 verses in the Quran where Allah defends Muhammad saying that you're not going crazy. So there's something definitely going on with him. Right. We would say if you take everything that is in the hadith literature, like Bukhari, Muslim and stuff, then this argument will apply to you. But people who don't really take everything at face value and are of the opinion that hadith are not reliable, which is more intellectually correct in my opinion, then it becomes a little more problematic. It's a different topic.
Right. So people that don't accept hadith will have to accept that Islam is very, I mean, all you have is the Quran, and the Quran can be interpreted, you know, like, it can't be interpreted like an infinite number of ways, but there's a lot of flexibility there. And so if the hadith was not preserved, that means Allah never intended us to live like Muhammad, right? It means that, you know, details on like how to pray Jummah, because the Quran says you should pray Jummah, you should pray mm-hmm. on Friday. The Quran says chop off the hands. You know, there's no context behind any of these things. So it's just left up to people to kind of decide for themselves. If someone is willing to accept that point, to that claim that the hadith are completely unreliable, that's a legitimate position. If someone wants to say, I'm only going to take the hadith I like a certain friend of us, I think you might know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a fair position. You know, I'm just going to take the hadith that I like. Really? No, you can't do that. Either you take the hadith based on the science of hadith, or you don't accept hadith, and you say, okay, I accept Quran only. And then you have to wonder, did Allah not preserve his final message properly? Because part of the message is how his final messenger lived, right? Anyways, one more thing, we're going to cut it. We don't have a lot of time today. I apologize for that. I just want to link something. Hold on 1 second. This is an interesting video that I think is worth watching by Muhammad Ghulan. I'm just going to post it in the Hangouts. And it's basically, tell me what you think about this. What does he say in this video? You want to talk about it?
Yeah. So Dr. Muhammad Ghulan is a neuroscientist doctor. He's a Muslim neuroscientist, to be precise. He mentioned something very profound in that video onwards the 15-minute mark. And he says that in the field of neuroscience, you can actually argue and make cases. And he himself said that he can make such strong arguments that Muhammad was hallucinating and was not a prophet. It was actually epileptic or some form of schizophrenia. He said he can make that argument, and that would be a valid argument. It will shake up a lot of people's faith. He also said that his own faith was shaken up a lot because neuroscience is going so deep and the way understanding is evolving that you can explain to very precisely which part of the brain deals with the concept of God. You know that if you have epileptic seizures related to temporal lobe, you will see God or hear God or see angels, etc. So that's a very good point he touched upon, that this is a very academic and a very valid position. It's not that we're pulling this out of thin air. It's a valid opinion according to a Muslim neuroscientist. Right.
He's not saying it's academically valid based on the hadith literature. What he's saying is, just to clarify what you're saying, he's saying that this is a perfectly reasonable explanation from science as to how people become prophets. And I'm going to quote exactly what he said. You explained it well. My lab is filled with atheists. You can explain a lot, and I can tell you from personal experience, you can get really shaken up if you don't have grounding in your Aqidah's belief. I can give you arguments. If you don't know the background of them, you can explain prophets to be schizophrenic mental illness patients where they can function by and large normally. And these are clinical cases. Those who are in neurology know this. You can go to the hospital and see people that speak about God, speak about religion, and come up with lengthy treatises that are really profound philosophically. And then he continues, if you don't know about a prophet, you will be shaken up. So he's saying that, you know, neuroscience actually has an explanation for prophethood, what we call prophethood. And that explanation is that it's a temporal lobe epilepsy. I think there's a misunderstanding of, like, what do you think of when someone says, oh, he's a crazy person, like he's Majnoon? Like, we're not saying he's Majnoon, right?
We're not saying that Muhammad is totally crazy, lunatic, walking around doing weird stuff. No, he's actually a sensible guy who can be a merchant, who can have a family, he can have kids, he can lead an army, give sermons, you know. He's a very articulate guy, but when he does have these experiences or when his brain activity spikes in those certain parts of his brain, he does have some hallucinations. The problem is how he interprets those hallucinations. Normal people would go on looking, trying to find a medical cure, naturalistic explanation, saying, why is this happening to me? And that's what neuroscience explains. Muhammad actually thought that God is talking to him.
What else would he have thought? I mean, he lived at a time where, like you know, there was people believed in things called demons. People believed in, some of them believed in angels. Some of them believed in magic and evil eye. And like, you know, like doesn't Prophet Muhammad say, you know, spit three times to get the devil away from you?
Yeah.
And, you know, whenever you hear the whispering of devils, you know, there's all sorts of there's things that people used to believe in. And so, you know, jinns and... It's quite understandable. It's quite reasonable that he thought maybe he was possessed, right? Like, that's the world.
Just to carry on, I just want to list the quick few experiences Muhammad did have. He actually heard pieces of food talk to him. He thought, like, he believed in talking cows and talking wolves. He would hear stones talk, trees talk. I believe you already covered that one. Another very interesting incident that occurred with Muhammad was he was helping people with the reconstruction of the Kaaba. This is pre-prophethood. And his uncle asked him to remove his lower garment to help him carry the stone. So Muhammad obliges, but as soon as he takes his lower garment off, he falls unconscious unexplainably, and the hadith said that his eyes rolled towards the sky. Eventually, he gets up in a state of panic, saying, "My lower garment, my lower garment," and then they quickly wrap it around his waist. This points to somewhat of something that might have triggered him, that he fell unconscious, or something like he was really anxious about it. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but it does show that there was something going on that doesn't explain it, because people don't really just fall unconscious for their own conscious decision.
And the interesting thing is he framed it in such a way that Allah saved me from something bad, right? Like, I was about to go, and there was another example too, where he was about to go into a dance hall, a disco hall. I don't know what the term used was, but I remember in my mind it was a disco hall. And as soon as he was about to go in, he fell unconscious again, and Allah saved him, right? So there's a couple of examples of that, right?
Yeah, definitely. We've already covered the first revelation.
I posted a link to Abdullah Gundal's Facebook page where he discusses this whole list of hadith, but carry on, sorry.
Yeah, another thing to note is that Muhammad would, now this is interesting because one of the most common precursors to a seizure is hearing ringing bell sounds. And interestingly enough, Muhammad says one of the most common ways when he would receive revelation from God would that he would hear ringing bell sounds, and then whatever the angel gave him, it would be stuck in his brain. Not only that, the other issue is that he says bells are the instruments of Satan. And I'm like, okay, why would God make his last prophet hear the instrument of Satan while he's receiving revelation? It doesn't add up.
Yeah, that's a strange one. But anyways, carry on, yeah.
Another thing Muhammad would suffer from is jittery teeth and very, very rapid, uncontrollable lip movements. It's also mentioned in the Quran that Allah is telling Muhammad, do not move your lips fast or recite the Quran slowly. The issue with this is it happens with when you're having a seizure, your teeth start jittering because your muscles stiffen up. And the way the companions of Muhammad described his situation was when he would have a revelation, out of respect, they would cover his face because the experience was heavy on the prophet. They said that his teeth would jitter as it almost sounded like a horde of bees is hovering over in front of his mouth. Mm-hmm. And this is an indication that he's having some sort of problem in his brain where he's losing cognitive control over certain faculties. Moreover, the weirdest one is he's apparently having this revelation come to him, and this companion comes and he's curious, you know, what's going on. And he says he thought that there was a camel snorting, and then he lifted up and realized that it's Muhammad receiving a revelation. And I'm like, why would God make his final messenger snort like a camel and then have jittery teeth, twitchy neck muscles? Then we go on, it goes on to say that he would have his color change, his breathing he would have trouble breathing, his heart rate would elevate. These are all signs of something going on in his brain. What's even more interesting is he would have cold sweats to the point where his wife describes that on a cold day, he would sweat so much that his forehead would be flooded with sweat.
And why is that again, important?
It's one of the symptoms of a seizure as well.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. A very, very interesting incident happened in Muhammad's life. Now, people that suffer from certain types of mental disorders do tend to suffer phases where they're sometimes better, sometimes worse. Depends on how much the age, if the disease has gotten worse or not. At one point in Muhammad's life, these hadith are found in Bukhari as well, his wife said that he had magic worked upon him to the point where he couldn't remember if he had intercourse with them or not, and he would forget certain things.
Right.
And that also, and then the rest of the narration is as bizarre as it can get. That Muhammad then saw two people in a dream, and then he read something, yeah. And then magic eventually went away after a week or something.
We can probably figure that he was diagnosed, self-diagnosing, right? He was like, okay, yeah, someone must have cast a spell on me.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you're right, it continues and it's really strange. But anyways, I don't want to get into that. Continue.
Yeah. So people then ask, like, how do you explain Muhammad coming over the Quran if he was having seizures? So I was looking into it today and I came across a specific term that this is a very well-studied topic in neuroscience and psychology about writing patterns and, writing patterns of people suffering from temporal lobe epilepsy and schizophrenia. It's called hypergraphia.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I was looking at it and I was reading the research, a lot of the neuroscientists say that people will, when they're having seizures or if they're diagnosed with temporal lobe epilepsy, they will become, the way they speak, some people will have compulsive rhymes stuck in their head. Like they can only speak in rhymes.
Mm-hmm.
Some people would start singing beautiful songs. Some people would, and one of the other things they notice is when these people write or when they speak, they tend to repeat the same topic over and over again, same sentences, sometimes same words, and sometimes they struggle to keep coherent thoughts, like they jump from topic to topic to topic, and they're not consistent in their thinking. Now, when you look at the Quran, you sort of see this as well, because the surah will be named, like suppose Surah 17, right? Surah Isra.
Mm-hmm.
The name of the surah is The Night Journey.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Only the first verse talks about the night journey, and then the whole surah is talking about one topic to another topic to another topic. And the Quran never finishes stories, and then it's repetition upon repetition upon repetition of the same sentence. Like,
same,
one
yeah.
wonders if this was a product of that. Now, do bear in mind though that what my honest own self opinion is that when Muhammad started as a prophet, he actually believed his delusions completely, and he made his people suffer for that. As you mentioned earlier, they were boycotted and stuff. He said he would not give up the message. But I think eventually, over time, he realized his own suspicion later on in life. Because when you look at his life, in the first few years of his prophethood, revelation would come in small chunks, and then it would be years without a revelation, right? But later on in his life, he was coming with verses on the fly. He would come up with a verse and abrogate it or edit it slightly whenever he wanted. And he would come up with verses giving him special privileges. Now notice that in the first 10 or so years of his prophetic careers, most of his chapters just talk about the Day of Judgment and don't really go into detail about jurisprudence or laws or how to live your life. It's just reminding people there's God, fear death, fear heaven and hell. And I feel when he did realize that he actually isn't getting this from God, he became more creative, and then he started adding a lot of stuff to it. And again, when you notice in Medina, his just-in-time revelations would come up. He would give himself exclusive prophetic privileges to marry as many women as he wants. and he can marry his adopted son's wife, and so on and so forth. So at the end, just to conclude my idea briefly, is Muhammad started off believing his delusion. He was scared at first. He believed he was talking to God. Over time, as he gained power and more followers, he realized he can manipulate them. Maybe the narcissism and the power got to him. He then started coming up. He was summoning the Quran revelation at will instead of waiting for years and years on and then getting himself humiliated by people saying that, oh, your God has forsaken you. So he, at the end of his life, I don't think he even himself believed, and he ended up becoming a really good con man.
Yeah, I think that's true, actually, because there's definitely instances, huge red flags, that anyone that is concerned, like anyone that wants to know whether this was a true man of God, all they have to do is look and see that, you know, Allah conveniently comes and saves Muhammad time and time and time again. And sometimes for the most pettiest of things, he decides to reserve space in his final revelation. Things like, oh, I'm going to tell your guests to get lost and go home so you have time with your new wife. Or, you know what, I'm going to come and I'm going to tell you can marry whoever you like, including Zainab, you know, without any mahar or wali, you know, or I will come and allow you to give up your night with Sauda, even though she's one of your wives, but no, she's old and she's kind of chubby, and you'd rather sleep with Aisha. So, hey, Allah is coming to the rescue and saving Muhammad. If you would like to make a deal with your wives, it's all good with the big man upstairs. It's all good. You're most welcome. You know what? That lady, she doesn't need to sleep with you. Even once every nine nights. I mean, she's an old lady. I mean, why does she need anyone to cuddle with? You got your other wife over there. I mean, that's like what I'm talking about. So yeah, like that's unfortunately, yeah, 20% of war spoils, straight, you know, khums, right? They call it khums. Anyhow, time is up, unfortunately. And the link to Abla Gondal's post on this topic is there. Unfortunately, we did not get to have a debate, which is okay. We use the time wisely for something else. Abdullah, a pleasure as always. Always happy to talk to you. Let's do this again. Maybe we'll schedule another debate and have another conversation.
Definitely. Yeah. I would love to do is explore this topic further, maybe get somebody from the field of neuroscience if possible and have their expertise, or maybe a psychologist, and see what they think of what we show them about Muhammad and what they feel if what was going on with him, because that is very interesting. Mm-hmm. Albeit, just before we wrap this up, a disclaimer that this is still a hypothesis. This is not, don't take my word for it. I'm not saying he was definitely 100% crazy or schizophrenic. We cannot make a diagnosis on a man that's been dead for 1400 years. To make such specific diagnosis, you know, judging what was he suffering from, what phase of his life was he worse or good, you need the person there. You need to attach probes to their heads and measure their brainwave activity. Unfortunately, we don't have that. One other way, thing I want to highlight is this is also based on accepting that the hadith that state that Muhammad went through these experiences are taken to be real, which a lot of Muslims don't agree with, and I understand, because the hadith have a lot of problems in them and they're written in a time of political warfare and turmoil. So as I said, even if this made you question the hadith's idea, that means we've done our job. Because suppose a Muslim says, you know, these hadith actually do make my prophet look really bad, and then they're written 200 years later, I think maybe this might not even be true. That's the first step. And that's what we're here for. Making people skeptics, making people question their faith, normalizing dissent.
Well, hold on. I wouldn't say we're here to make people question their faith. I would say we're here to present our arguments and the evidence, and we will inviting people to see if what they believe makes sense. I would rather not say in that way, but I mean, basically we're here to throw a wrench in the gears, you know, just to put a little bit of a question mark in the official story and to hopefully make people think.
Yeah, just turn that light bulb on. That's it.
Okay, thank you, Abdullah. Thank you, everyone. And it is nighttime here. So if you're just waking up on your side of the world, good morning. And if you're going to bed, have a good night. The link to the post is going to be in the description box. Please go and check out Abdullah Gondal's post on Facebook. We'll try to publish it outside of Facebook for people that don't like Facebook. I know some people don't like using Facebook for privacy or whatever reasons. But yeah, you can always go check out the post. You don't have to like it if you're scared about someone seeing that. But do check it out. And all the best. Good night. Thank you, Abdullah.
You too. Have a good night. Assalamu alaikum for all my Muslim viewers. Good night.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.